Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
And Deb Rees, experts in business, leadership, and lifestyle.
Skilling your softly to a successful you. Emotions are your value, and your value is your business. UK Health Radio.
Damn it, those weeks are flying by. Boom! I just have to stop. But here's the thing, I did stop. I stopped last week for a whole week. I shot off in my make-believe camper van, shot off my camper van, bikes, hiking boots, and just spent the whole week kind of getting wet. Getting wet, coastal walking, biking. I mean, very little, almost non-existent digital technology in my week. Bar for a coaster, I had to do the radio show. I mean, committed to you listeners for sure, because you have a earworm that has to be filled every week. And I am. We are. This is the place to be and to do it. So yeah, it was quite a chilled week for me. It was a week where I spent the kind of time resetting, rebooting my mind and my heart and my internals with that. Because you know what? When you get stressed, your internals, they shout out and say, Paulo, Reese, take a break, man. We're stressing you. And they do, you know, your heart, your lungs, your liver. Or did you know that your kidneys are the same shape as your ear? I mean, I was working with a lady a couple of weeks back. Amazing person. And she said, Paul, the reason why your ears are the shape the way they are is because they connected to your kidneys. It's like, listen to them. Oh, okay, I'll give that a go. All week I'm listening to myself and wow, I actually heard myself speak for the first time. Not my voice. I heard myself saying things to myself. Not my mind either. But trust me, my heart has a cute little voice. If you listen hard enough, you'll hear it for sure. You really will. So, I mean, it sounds a bit chaotic, sounds a bit off the wall, but you know me, listeners. I'm a man that has to prove things to myself. So I listened hard and I heard things. I heard not with my physical ear, not with my, I'm going to say, my obvious mind. I heard it with my imagination. But I heard myself. I heard my heart saying, thank you, Paul, for resting. I heard my liver saying, great that you've introduced some crystal water into your life. I heard my kidney saying, yes, you like to rest about 3 o'clock every day because I've had enough of everything you put in. So be gentle. I mean, all these things, it was just nice. And listeners, you know, give it a go. Don't go on holidays to chaotic beaches. Don't go on holidays where you're getting drunk every night by the bar. Go on a holiday where there's nothing around you and you have to sit and listen to you. What an amazing experience. And you know, I left Deb at home. She was here doing her thing, doing her stuff, working with her clients. And yeah, my digital part was, of course, I would Zoom call her in the night and how are you, how be, and all these things. Tell her about my realizations of what my heart voice sounded like, what my lung voice sounded like, or my liver voice and kidney voice. They all have little voices. You might think, Paul, are you going nuts? I tell you, I'm not. You have an inner voice. Every part of you has its own voice and its own personality. Did you know the organs have different colors? I didn't know that either. They have different colors, which means they are different. Great to see, listeners. Do you know what I mean? So anyway, that was a big part of my last week's insights. And I'm going to say enlightenment. Now, enlightenment comes for everybody in life. And it does. Some recognize it, some don't recognize it. And here's where I'm going with this, is that I remember my first enlightenment experience was when I was about 45 after going on a three principles weekend. Amazing. You spend all weekend just talking from your wisdom, which means you've got to allow your think to think. I said that. You've got to allow your think to think. So that was my first, because after that enlightened weekend, for some reason or other, I couldn't eat meat again, which is crazy because I was brought up with meat. Cooked dinners and things, you know, but I just couldn't. I couldn't eat the stressed food again. So that kind of changed for me. But here's the thing. When you have these enlightening moments, what you find is suddenly that, whoa, my whole name means something to me. It becomes an enlightening moment. And then also you think, when you, as these enlightening moments grow, then it becomes a need to share. And this is where our beautiful guest comes in today. But suddenly you find yourself needing to share what you've experienced. You need to share these enlightenments for other people can recognize their own enlightenments, perhaps, or they all recognize that their journeys from your journey, recognize their learnings from your learnings. And it goes on and on and on. And yes, the market of book writing is huge, but also crazy at the same time. And I'll say that. People think, oh, you write the book, you're famous. No, doesn't work like that. Not all, trust me. Mine didn't get me famous. It just caused me a lot of heartache and headache going to the book. I did loads of book signing events all around the country in the UK with WH Smiths and things. Man, getting into loads of political discussions and all these things. Never again. Never again. But an interesting time. And you know, why do we want our guest on here today? Because, you know, we really need to talk about the honesty of this industry. The honesty of where it is. How important it is to share your story. Everybody's got a book in them, so they say. And you know what? Without further ado, let's bring in this book expert. Let's bring in this lovely lady, you know. I mean, I didn't know there were author mentors. I didn't know there were people out there that would take you through the journey. You know, you get people who just want to publicize your books and things. But no, we got individuals now that understand the skill of projecting your emotions onto paper and putting it out there. So it adds value into the emotional economy of people's readings experience. I always say, it's not what you get out of the book, it's what the book gets out of you. That's what I say. And without further ado, let me introduce, get in this beautiful lady here. We have the lovely, the wonderful, and the, of course, the 70s kid, I'm going to say, is of course the author mentor, Joanna Cawley. Let me let it spill in.
Hello.
Joanna, good to see you, girl. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, Paul, that is the most amazing introduction ever.
Oh, bless you, girl. Listen, thank you for coming on.
And,
you know, I want to talk about, you know, being an author, the book industry in its whole, you know, how you can go, you know, how you can pay for a package and be a number one bestseller. Out of the blue, let's talk all these things. And I, you know, I don't want it to be controversial here, but I wish what I want is for one people to have a love to say, do you know what, I'm going to write something. Mm. And know that writing a book isn't an art, it's just a process. You know, listen, I'm dyslexic. So for me, when I wrote my book, We're All Born Mediums, I was like, stringing words together is difficult for me. Yeah. And in the sense of spelling, me and spell check have loads of quarrels and things.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't realize that, you know what, Paul, it doesn't have to be a process. You can just write and then piece it all together.
Yeah. That's right. You know, a lot of people think that they've got to get the first draft perfectly down. And actually, the first draft is supposed to be a scribble. It's supposed to be having a bit of fun. You know what I mean? So the first thing that I actually tell my writers to do is to go and get themselves a notebook, but one of those old fashioned things, you know, like an exercise book that you'd find at school or something.
Oh, yeah.
Just like one of those old paperback kind of things that you can just scribble all over. And the first thing I get them to do is to scribble on the cover. So you completely deface the thing.
Oh, wow.
Because then you kind of feel free to put all your rubbish thoughts into it. Mm. You know, you can put, if you go out there and get yourself a beautiful little notebook with, you know, flowers and little embossed things around the edges and da da da, you're too scared to use the darn thing. So you never put your ideas down. The first draft is the most important because it's just your dumping ground and you've just got to have a bit of fun with it. So that's the idea, is to just get rid of all your thoughts in the first place, and then you hone it later. Yeah. The good writing is in the editing. It's not in the first draft. It's in the rewriting and the honing and the polishing. And it takes that's the bit that takes the time. And I think a lot of people who set off writing a book don't realize that to begin with.
I remember when we wrote the first book there, and the editor, she would come back and she would push and push and push and push, knowing there was, and I didn't know that, you know, for me, it was such a scary process, Joanna, because suddenly I'm having to really deep dive into why I wrote this piece, this little chapter or this paragraph or sentence and add a greater value to it. And what I loved about that experience is it really taught me a lot about myself.
Yeah, she sounds like a great editor.
Well, you know, these.
That's what they're supposed to do.
I'm going back about 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago with this book.
All right.
Yeah. Even the publisher has gone into bankruptcy, and that's gone also. I don't even know where the book is now. It's lost somewhere out in book heaven, for sure. Yeah, absolutely, which is sad, but yeah, that's how things go, I guess. Which is odd, isn't it?
You have to resurrect it.
I've
on a mission and refine it.
Yeah, I have a book that's nowhere because the publisher went bankrupt. But apparently I still see us on Amazon, but I don't even know where those royalties go. Somewhere. It's crazy. Yeah. But here's the thing is, you know, I found when writing the book, I just had lots of bits, as you say, first.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of bits. But I think the hardest thing for me was, how do I know this is even going to be interesting?
Well, now that is a very good question. And I wish, to be honest with you, Paul, I kind of wish a lot more authors asked that before they even approach me. You know, I've been a ghostwriter for a long time. So I've got about, I don't know, it's over 20 books out there. It's about 23, 24 books out there now. Mm. And you said a little earlier in your intro that everybody has a book in them. That is probably true, but it's not necessarily true that everybody should write it.
Oh, wow. I love how courageous that statement was. Is that, you know, everybody should write it. But we could write it for ourselves.
Yes, you could do, but there is an art to storytelling. And there are just little tricks and techniques and things that if you haven't learned about, mm-hmm. then you're not going to know how to use them. So it's kind of one of those things that, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So it's always a really good idea to maybe just sort of get into a little bit of a creative writing course or just pick up a book on, you know, how fiction writers actually write their fiction stories mm-hmm. so that when it comes to you writing your life story, you know how to tell a story. You're not just regurgitating fact, but you're telling a story and drawing the reader in, because that's what you really need. It's a relationship. So you're writing the book, but the reader is reading the book. And that book is the kind of the medium, if you will. I'm sort of using your terminology there. The book is the communicator between the writer, the teller, and the reader. Yeah. But both people, both parties bring something to that transaction, mm-hmm. you know, and what happens in the middle is the magic bit. So you can suggest something as the writer, the reader is going to interpret it with the same kind of energy that you've put into the writing. They're going to bring their energy to it. And it's not necessarily going to be the way that you intended them to interpret it. They're going to bring their energy to it, their own story to it. And that's where the magic happens, because it's no longer just your story. You've let your baby go now. It's happening. This is a work of creativity, and you just see the magic suddenly start happening.
I love your passion. Yeah, you do it. You can feel it in, and
it works,
very much you can. So something you said there sort of, I don't know, sparked my interest and my earworm, I would say that. So, you know, not everybody... Everybody has a book in them, but not everybody has a sellable book, let's say. That might sound a little bit industrial, but, you know, at the end of the day, a book is something that's there to be sold for somebody to experience. Mm. Do you turn away authors?
No, actually, I don't. My task is, I think this is kind of my calling, if you will, Paul. This is why I love doing what I do. And so one of those things, you know, I'm really passionate about what I do because I've just always loved it, is finding the story within the fact.
Okay.
Yeah? So it doesn't matter how ostensibly dull the book is going to be. I mean, listen, I've written a book on telemarketing.
Oh, wow.
And it's a really riveting read. You wouldn't believe it, but it really is. It teaches people how to do telemarketing.
What is that book? Call that book out there, Joanna. People need to read it.
Yeah, it is. It's telemarketing. I'm just trying to think of the author's name. I'm going to have to be careful because, of course, I ghostwrote it, so I'm not allowed.
Okay. I'm
going to have a little caveat, and I'll let you know afterwards. I'll tell you what, if you do notes and things after your radio show, what I'll do is I'll send you the cover and the Amazon link, and there you go. Yeah.
Cool. I'll be careful with my questions moving forward because
I shouldn't have raised it.
The GDPR thing, you know what I mean? But anyway... Yeah. But here's the thing. Let's come back to, you know,
the thing is, Paul, there's a story there. Yeah. There's always a human story. So whatever it is that you're writing about, I've written one on how to set up a physiotherapy practice, telemarketing, business coaching. I mean, all these things that sound like they're going to be really, really factual, but actually there's a human being at the bottom of all of this somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And every human being has a story. So we're going to find that story. And who are they talking to? As soon as you know, really, truly know who it is that you're writing this book for,
yeah,
then you actually can kind of think, all right, now what are their problems? What are they facing at the moment? What is emotionally driving them? As soon as you tap into that, you've got your story. And that's the thread of the book.
It's almost like a spiritual journey. Do you know what I mean?
Totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And you know, I want to touch on this part of the, I know, our time together, which is the book industry.
Sure.
You know, I'm going to say this with the greatest respect, but I believe the book industry is kind of broken. And what I mean by that is that it doesn't carry if you'd written a book, it was something that was pretty special or it kind of gave you a bit of feminism, from writing a book. I mean, that I feel has really been watered down. Because do you feel that, you know, a bestseller isn't longer a bestseller, something you just sold into a best-selling industry?
Yeah. Well, I think that's come about with incredible growth of self-publishing.
Mm-hmm.
You get, you know, your big flyers like Amazon, and they kind of give the term bestseller new meaning.
Yeah.
Because a bestseller, you know, when I was growing up, being the 70s chick, rock chick from the 70s. Yeah. If you were a best-selling author, then you were really well known. It was like a big deal.
Yeah.
It's probably true to say that if you're a best-selling author now, it doesn't really hold the same weight that it used to. And I totally agree with that. The reason is because there is such a huge growth in the self-publishing market. And I'm not dissing this at all because I actually work with it all the time. And I think it's absolutely fantastic. We need it. And it's a good thing that it's there.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the term best-selling, it's all done on the basis of algorithm and all the rest of it. I'm not a tech kind of person or anything, but when it comes to like a big person like Amazon, they come up with categories. So they ask you before you publish your book, they ask you to put to categorize it. So they'll say, what is your overarching genre for this book? And you'll go nonfiction. Yeah. And then say, oh, okay, so it's nonfiction. So what kind of category in nonfiction is it? And they whittle you down and down and down. So you'll say it's nonfiction, it's business. And what kind of business is it? Oh, it's to do with sales coaching or something like that. And what kind of sales coaching? It's for women, female. So now you're kind of narrowing that funnel all the way down. So it's asking you question after question after question. So you're niching it, which is a good thing because you need to know who exactly your market is. But by the time you've actually finished, you could actually end up being just you in one in your own category. And if you are just you in your own category, I don't know. I mean, what have you got going on in the background there? It's sort of, I am writing a book on, I know, because I actually found out the other day you've got some bum cream on your desk, haven't you? Right. I'll explain that in a bit. Paul is a cyclist. And when I spoke to him the other day, he admitted to me that he has a little tin of anti-chafing cream.
Chafing cream, yeah. It's Xiaomi cream, yeah.
So just to illustrate my point, if you were writing a book about anti-chafing, as a writer, anti-chafing, I am the expert of anti-chafing bum cream and writing at the same time. You would probably be the only person in the world in that category. And that makes you, guess what?
A bestseller.
Wow.
That simple process in some way is fantastic, but it's not fair either.
Well, really I know. Well, look, it's just the way the world is now, really, isn't it?
Listen, Joanna, let me jump in, because what I'm going to do is, listeners, we're going to jump into a quick 60-second commercial here. And when we come back there, we're going to deep dive into, the self-publishing, what this looks like. And then we're also going to get lovely Joanna's details. And, of course, we're going to talk about her own life, because I have loads of notes here that I haven't touched on yet. So here we go, listeners. Let's just dive back in. Quick seconds going from now. Happy days.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Happy days! Yes, listeners, and we are back, and I have no doubt that you hit red on that mic then, for sure. There's lots of those times you might think, whoa, Paul, slow it down. But here's the thing, my mother always said he got a bell in every tooth. Thankfully. But here we are. We're, of course, with the lovely Joanna Cawley, who is an author, mentor, ghostwriter, and all these things. And you've been at this for, I am getting... wow, how many years? I actually don't see that year. How long have you been doing this, girl?
Well, I was very careful not to actually stipulate exactly how long I've been doing this.
That's why it's not on you.
I started when I was 2, Paul. It's been a while. It's been about 30 years I've been in the industry, yeah. Yeah, I started writing for radio. It's kind of interesting coming out of those that radio commercial. I used to be the person who was writing that script.
Really?
And so now I'm on the other side of the mic, which is really nice.
That is
So that's what I used to do. I used to write all the commercials and promos for radio stations. I was in South Africa for a long time, and then came over here. And I was writing for a big radio group that is now global. So you remember Classic FM and all of them.
Yeah.
They own a lot of radio stations. So I was writing for them for a long time. And then I was writing for the BBC for TV for a long time as well.
Wow, girl.
Writing for magazines and writing my own book, which I finally got published in 2011. So that's when it all sort of kicked off for me. And that's when I started properly ghostwriting and going on my own. Yeah.
What's that book, girl? You can't say you've written something without mentioning it.
It's called From Mother to Stepmother by Joanna Cawley. And it's how to marry a man, his kids and his ex-wife. Yeah.
Man, I should give that to Deb.
The single mother's guide to marrying a man, his kids, and his ex-wife. Blending families is a huge deal.
That is brilliant, because my Deb married me, my 2 children, and my ex-wife at the same time. Yes, right. Say that book again, so our listeners get it.
From Mother to Stepmother
by Joanna Cawley.
By Joanna Cawley. Yeah,
by Joanna Cawley. And
it's on Amazon.
And here's the thing is that, that also you're an award winner for your radio writing. UN Nations Poetry Prize winner.
I know that. I mean, that to me is, I still can't believe that. I mean, that happened a very long time ago. We're talking about 2006 or something like that. But I've only written, Paul, here's the thing. This is the absolute doggone truth here. I've written two poems in my life. Two.
Wow. And it must have been profound.
The first one was published in South Africa. And the second one won the United Nations Poetry Prize. So I don't know why I haven't carried on writing poetry, but I've just never really believed in it, really.
Wow.
I've just had a bit of fun with it. I think maybe it's because of my musical background. I'm a musician and a singer. So maybe just the poetry sort of came out of that. I've just never looked at it that seriously. Literally, I've written two poems and both of them have been published and one of them won a prize. So it's crazy. I don't know what that's about.
Well, let me jump on something here because you kind of scanned through it, which was, of course, a professional singer. And you sang with some of the big names there, girl, which says, you know, you've met a lot of people who've had the privilege of meeting you. Now, tell us a little bit about that career.
Okay. So, all right. When I was living in South Africa, I went over there when I was about 13, 14. I grew up in Plymouth and my father was South African. So he went over there and it was in the mid 80s. And I don't know if anybody can remember the mid 80s that is listening at the moment. Hopefully so. But in South Africa, it was the middle of the state of emergency. Yes. So apartheid was falling apart, thankfully, but it took a hell of a lot of fighting for us to get there. Mm-hmm. So we really landed in a political maelstrom. It was just, it was chaotic. And of course, everybody was boycotted from, everybody boycotted South Africa. So we didn't have very many people coming over from, UK or the States or anything like that to come and perform. So we were very much a closed nation, really, when it came to our own music. We had radio, obviously, so we knew what was going on in the hit parade. but basically, we didn't really have anywhere. So when apartheid disappeared, which is absolutely fabulous, suddenly the walls came down and the international acts started coming in. By this stage, I was already a professional vocalist. So I was basically front man for a very big rock band at the time called Late Final.
Wow.
In South Africa. And at one point there were 10 of us. This whole thing at Late Final was a bit of an institution. By the time I joined it, it was already about 25 years old. So there'd been sort of so many members of this band. But it was a brilliant band. It was we basically just did covers and things like that, but really well, to be fair. Yeah. We did them incredibly well because, this is all we had to focus on. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the international acts coming over. So we had to be as good as they were, kind of thing, as good as the real deal.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had a lot of practice and a lot of experience both on stage, because I'm a professional actor as well. That's what I studied. I studied acting. So I had a whole lot of experience with that. And then I also had a lot of experience in the studio as well, because I was doing a lot of in-session singing, adverts and da-di-da and backing tracks and da-di-da.
Wow.
So apartheid disappeared and suddenly all the international acts started coming over. And they needed supporting acts, for their gigs.
Yeah.
And of course, they wanted the best of the local produce, as it were. And I was there. So, I got to sing with people like Lenny Kravitz and backing tracks for ELO. And and I remember Elkie Brooks as well. And and there was the keyboardist from 10cc actually bought my dad's old house, set up his recording studio there, and brought me in to do some backing tracks for ELO at the time. And he had no idea that I was standing in what used to be my brother's bedroom, was now the voice booth. And I waited until the whole session was over, and then I told him, "Do you know what? I grew up in this very house. This room where I'm standing now singing for you and ELO is where I decided one day I'm going to be a singer."
Wow, what a story, girl.
Isn't that amazing?
It's just absolutely awesome. It truly is. How the universe works, eh?
I know. And I actually remember the very day that I decided I was going to sing professionally. I was 15 years old and I had my little khaki rucksack on my back and I was feeling homesick for the UK and I was feeling lonely. And I switched on the TV. And in those days, there was, we only had TV for like, I don't know, about like 4 hours in the afternoon or something.
Yeah.
And this one show, it was Pop Shop or something. Yeah, it was like our version, the South African version of Top of the Pops. Mm-hmm. Pop Shop. I'm pretty sure it was called Pop Shop. I switched it on and there was Toto. And oh, Toto wow. was I think he was singing, I think they were playing Rosanna. Mm-hmm. And I just remember I fell in love with Steve Lukather immediately on the spot. That was it. He was my man. That was it. And I just dropped my bag on the floor and I decided I'm going to sing one day. You know what? 10 years later, I knew the guys from Toto. I'd met them. They'd come over to Cape Town and jammed with them. I flirted with Steve Lukather. He was an awful flirt. And it was absolutely amazing. All of those dreams came true. Yeah, talk about manifesting.
Yeah.
It all came true.
It's beautiful. I mean, it is, Joanna. It's beautiful. I love your life backstory. That also is what creates a future story. It is wonderful. But I want to do something that's as important as your backstory, and that's just to get your contact details so people can talk about their future story. So what are your contact details there, girl?
Well, it's really quite simple. I have my own website, obviously. So that's the Authorship Mentor Program, which, mm-hmm. yes, is a bit of a mouthful. But it's the authorshipmentorprogram.co.uk. That's the main one. I am on LinkedIn under my own name, Joanna Collie, as in the very intelligent lassie dog, the long-haired collie running for the sheriff. So Collie. And I'm on Facebook as well under my own name, Joanna Collie. So, yeah, just look me up. Google me. I'm all over it.
all over the place. When things are simplified in that way, Joanna Collie, then it's easy to find. And let me say that again. It's authorship mentor program.co.uk. We will get that out, listeners, before the end of the show again. So do get your pen and paper ready. If you missed that, let's talk about self-publishing. Self-publishing, self-singing, all these things. You created your own cover versions, it's all this kind of has one theme running through it, which is self-success. You know, it really is running right through your life. There's been a lot of self-success. And when we think about self-publishing, that, you know, I feel there are two types of self-publishers: those who are just looking for self-success and those who are looking to deliver or offer something into the emotional economy of people's lives. There are two types, I feel. And neither are wrong, but there's two very different agendas there in what you get, in what the book gets out of you, is what I feel also. Do you feel that self-publishing has kind of deteriorated the quality of book writing or improved the quality of book writing?
I don't think that's a very good question, actually. I don't think self-publishing in itself is capable of deteriorating book writing, the quality of book writing. Self-publishing is just a loudspeaker. It's just a way of getting your voice heard. Mm-hmm. What the most important thing is to pause before you hit the publish button and just make sure that what you've done is the kind of quality you want your readers to see. Yeah.
You were
saying just now about self-success. Excuse me. I think for me anyway, what I do, yes, it's very important for people to know who they're writing for and what they want to achieve with the book. The book obviously has to do something, perform in some way for them, you know, whether it's a giveaway thing, like a lead magnet, you know, or, you know, something that they can give to their clients as a gift, or whether they want it to open some doors in terms of publicity, get on TV, have a couple of interviews or whatever. that you need to know what you want your book to do for you. But absolutely, by far and away, the most important thing is to have a sense of creativity, to actually enjoy the creative experience of writing the book. You know, they always say, what is it, you know, everybody wants to get the book written and published, but actually it's the journey. It's the way, it's the experience of actually writing the book. You find so much out about yourself when you actually really start digging deep and getting into the creativity, the stuff that's inside you, in your heart, in your soul. It comes onto the page, you know, if you're doing it properly. If it doesn't, if you don't get that that satisfaction, if you don't get that feeling, then actually that book is not ready to be published. You need to have, you need to have that passion as you're writing it for your reader to have the passion when they're reading it.
Wow, that makes so much sense, Joanna. To me, it does, because I remember when I say when I wrote my book, I felt like I was, it felt a relief. It felt like I had this stuck inside me. And when I shared it, I was looking to unstick people the same way I become unstuck, I think, when I wrote that book. It was absolutely. And here's the thing. You have a process. So, you know, you help create the course. We're going back to the bestseller thing, but it's there. It's a process and it has to be used. Yeah. You know, we didn't, you know, that was done way before and will be here long after me and you leave this beautiful earth. You know, the process of creating bestsellers is what it is, as you say. And you're not going to not use it. Yeah. If we can create bestsellers in that tiny pinhead of niche, well, then that's how it is. But you have a process where, you know, you have a 6-month process is what it looks like.
Yes.
People working with you and getting these things published. How does that work?
Okay. So I used to teach creative writing at university. And I managed to sort of marry everything that I learned during that time. I think I was there for about 11 years or something, with what I had learned in copywriting. So I brought my business writing skills and married them up with the creative writing skills, because I realized actually writing the bestseller, in fact, let's do away with the term bestseller because it's actually a bit bogus now, but writing a book that actually makes you feel like you're really achieving something and it's your baby, you know, when you're writing it, it's not all down to talent. Everybody seems to think, well, a lot of people think anyway, that they've got to be very talented to be a really good writer. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's only about 50%.
Really?
The other 50% is learned skills. Mm-hmm. It's a craft, you know, so you can learn the craft of writing. And that's what I teach. So I bring creative writing practices into nonfiction. So all the stuff, all the tricks and techniques and little tips and whatever that the big novelists use for, you know, their fiction work, like J.K. Rowling and da-da-da-da-da, you know, character, working with setting and atmosphere and natural dialogue, all of those things, I bring them into the nonfiction world. So if you're writing a business book, we write it as though it's an absolute best-selling fiction story.
Yeah. Wow.
When you suddenly get your reader completely engaged. That's the art of storytelling.
And I love
those are techniques. You can learn those things. Anyone can learn those things.
I do. I really enjoy listening to that process. I mean, you know, my book is in the middle of being written. I have a kind of draft title, which is The Mechanics of the Entrepreneurial Mind. So I've got to get this finished off. I've probably been piecing this together for the last 3 or 4 years, and I know I'll have to rewrite a lot of it. But here's what we're going to do, listeners. We're going to jump into our final commercial year. And when we come back, we're going to first get your pen and paper ready, because Joanna's going to give you her details again, you know, to get hold of this lovely lady so she can help you with your lovely book to become a bestseller on all the beautiful places. So I'm going to catch you pretty soon, about 90 seconds, listeners, and we're going to come back and get Joanna's details.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Whoa, yes, we are back on. I mean, wow, a quick run to the loo and back. You've got to have a potty break, do you know what I mean? I mean, these things, you know what? What I love about radio is what you can't see. That's what I love about radio, is what you can't see. And I love then that radio is all about imagination. Because here's the thing, you have an image of what I look like, listeners. And I'm guaranteeing that 80% of what you think I look like is not. The heads up is, of course, I'm bald. I'm bald as it can. I'm about 5'8 on a real tall day is where I am. That depends on how tall my ego is. But other than that, you're going to have to figure it out for yourself. Or you can find me on social media, Paul Rees. You'll see me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and all those other. Apparently, I went to put something on Twitter today, and they said they banned my account. And I don't know why. I have no reason. I have no knowing why what I did wrong. But Twitter, I do apologize in advance for whatever I tweeted that shouldn't have been tweeted. But you'll find me then on LinkedIn, Paul Rees Business Design. The same on Facebook. And of course, if you want to get hold of me, then reach out in that way, because the contact details that are important for this show today is, of course, Joanna Collins. So, Joanna, give us your details again. Ready, listen to our pen and paper, because here we go.
Yeah, so I run AMP, A-M-P, which stands for the Authorship Mentor Program. And you can find me online. I've got my website, which is theauthorshipmentorprogram.co.uk. But you can just Google AMP and it'll probably come up with me. And I'm on Facebook under my own name, Joanna Collie, C-O-L-L-I-E. So that's Facebook and Twitter. And Instagram, I don't do very much Instagram, to be honest with you, but no, LinkedIn as well. I'm all over LinkedIn under my own name, Joanna Collie.
Happy days. And it's so much easier when we have that simple way of connecting with you, Joanna, for sure. You know, when we think about publishing, let's just think about authors, you know, is that. So because here's the thing that I'm going to be a little kind of, I don't know, pointy here. But we are realizing our well-being has become one of the fashionable words to use in the corporate industry, which means that the word trauma has become more fashionable also.
Yes, that's true.
It's pulling out what were hidden words in the past. Mm. Even the word stress is very fashionable now. Although for the younger generation, I'm going to say, you know, because I do a lot of keynote speaking in schools and colleges and universities. And, you know, one of the most shocking, you know, realizations is that when I do an audience and I ask who really understands the word stress, 99% of them put their hands up and really understand the deep meaning of what stress is. And the other 60% have got some kind of caffeine drink in their hand, which influences. Yeah, truly, it is. Yeah. It is sad. But the reality is that people are becoming more open to talking about, you know, their emotions. It's like if we look at the book, the Child Called It. That was a really extreme understanding of severe abuse. Where now we see this become almost more commonplace, where people are writing about those experiences, writing about trauma, and you know, where it's bringing the reality of people's lives closer together. Do you think through what is the openness now of book writing?
Well, I think it's fantastic that people are connecting with themselves. I mean, the way you opened the show, do you remember you were talking about how you went away for a week and you just, you know, you said, don't go away to a beach or something like that. Just go away to somewhere that you could actually, there's just nothing happening. So you can just completely listen to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and you were talking about your organs being different colors and things like that. I mean, that is essentially the author journey. That is authorship. When you can actually really kind of dig deep inside yourself and give yourself permission to express yourself, really express what's going on emotionally, thought-wise, and kinesthetically as well. What's happening with your body? Where are you hurting? You know, have you got any pains? Why is that so? Write it down. Make a note. Become aware. It's self-awareness.
Wow.
That, to me, is authorship. And as I said earlier on, just getting it into your notebook is the first draft. Yeah. It doesn't have to be, you know, picture perfect. You don't have to have paragraphs or even sentences. You could just have one word, you know, like sort of scribbled across a page and like a little phrase, like sort of somewhere else. It could be a complete sort of hodgepodge of scribbles and ideas and nonsense, but you've got to get it onto the page, get it out of you. And then you're kind of feeling you're relieving some of that stress. You're letting it out. And it's later when you review what you've written, that's when you actually start getting creative and you can actually start making form out of what, you know, what you've just sort of splurged onto the page, if you will.
I love
writing is in the editing. It's not in the first draft. Just get it onto the page and don't worry about it. You can always refine it later.
I love what you're doing here, Joanna, because you're removing the clinical approach to writing and you're bringing in what is the real organic understanding of, you know, going back to heart to paper rather than keyboard to screen.
Do you know something, Paul? Seriously, for me, this all comes down to the way we are brought up. You know, we're shoved into school at the age of 4 or 5, something like that. And we are basically told that we've got to sit at a desk and learn new ways of being rather than play. And if you look at animals and if you look at nature around you, the way everybody learns how to actually behave in social circumstances in the big society, it's actually by interacting with each other and it's playing, using your imagination when you're a kid. They beat it out of us, you know, when we're sort of really young and we're told we've got to like do sentence structure. We've got to start with a beginning, a middle and an end. If you don't get it right the first time, then that's a rubbish essay. You know, you're no good at English. No, rubbish. That's absolute rubbish. It's playing. It's imagining. It's allowing yourself, giving yourself permission to be creative and imaginative and play like you did when you were a kid, you know, before anybody told you it was wrong, because it really isn't. That's creativity, don't you think?
Wow. Joanna, you're a rare find, girl. You're a rare find in certainly in the author industry. You know, I've met a lot of mentors in my time from all different walks of life, for sure. But you really do fit in with what is the future. And why I say that is because you fit in with well-being. You fit in with trauma. You fit in with excitement. You fit in with self-worth, self-belief, gratitude. You fit in with all those words or emotions that are required to make something a read to a difference, a read to a difference. Because if I read a book, I actually want it to benefit myself, to my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, meaning that what did the book get out of me? What did I get out of the book?
Yes, absolutely. Because as soon as that happens, you have no idea how that's going to affect or impact somebody else's life. Because remember, they're bringing their own experience to the reading of your book. So that's the relationship.
I love that that excited you, because that tells me about your character and how spiritual you are.
It is a spiritual thing for me. It's very, very much a spiritual thing. I firmly believe that this essence of creativity, imagination, and play is what we are intrinsically all about. We're created to be creative, and that's what we should do.
Joanna, let me jump in there, because guess what? Sadly, we've come to the end. We've run out of time is where we are. It is. It's been amazing. But let me do this, listeners, okay? It's very easy to find Joanna Colley. You'll find it on Facebook. You'll find it on LinkedIn. And just go there first, and then you'll find a website from there. So Joanna Colley, this is the lady that will help you piece it together, make sure it's organically, spiritually, and lifely beautiful. This person isn't interested in human doings. She's interested in being all in helping human beings create human being books. That's where we are. It's very
nice
beautiful.
Way,
I have thoroughly enjoyed our time together here, Joanna, and I'm hoping that let's pick up another show in a couple of months and see where we are in the world of author and books. I would absolutely love this to happen.
Me too, Paul. It's just been such a pleasure. I really have enjoyed this. I could talk all day with you.
All right, girl. It's been a booking dance. It's been lovely. Let me ask you one more thing before we go on. We've got about 30 seconds.
Okay.
If you was to give one piece of advice to an unknown writer who wants to pick up a pen and paper, what would that be?
It would be make sure that the paper that you're writing on is scruffy, because you just want to be able to get your ideas down. Don't buy a book that's beautiful. Get a really cheap old thing that you can scribble all your stuff down. You want to get your first draft down. Just get your ideas down. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, brilliant. Happy day, then.
Who's watching?
Joanna, this has been fantastic. Okay, listeners, thank you ever so much for your earworm again this week. I will catch you, of course, this time next week on another show with another guest as beautiful as the guest we've had this week, I'm sure. So pick up your pen, paper, put your heart and soul into that hand of yours. Get writing. Love who you are. Love what it is you write. Love everybody around you. And I'll see you this time next week. And we're going to say bye for now and boom!
Emotions are your value, and your value is your business. UK Health.